today. The case is Sermar versus McCasey.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is David Trace, and I'm representing the respondent, Omar Samari. And this case, judges, really boils down to some misunderstandings in the course of the testimony that led to findings of adverse credibility and then, of course, a demand for corroborative evidence. In short, what the judge found was that the two applications for asylum were consistent with each other. However, the testimony wasn't consistent with both of those applications. What was missing in the testimony that was in both applications was a reference to an arrest in 1998 where the petitioner was held for 1 week. That is written in both applications. Later, in testimony, the petitioner did not talk about the 1 week. Instead, he focused on the 15 months that he was incarcerated without charges and beaten on a regular basis. When asked about these discrepancies by the judge, the petitioner said, "I didn't even read those applications." Now, is that foolish? Is that ignorant? Is it dumb? Maybe it's all those things. But that's what he told the judge. "I didn't even read it." And in the beginning of a hearing, the judge does ask, "Did you write? Is this your signature? Is this true?" And he said, "Yes." So the question comes later when he's saying, "You know, Judge, I really didn't read it." Is that in some way correcting those applications, or is that some way going back to the beginning? And does the judge then have a responsibility to say, "Hey, wait a minute, you didn't even read these?" Instead, what he did was he just made an adverse credibility finding and, in essence, ignores all the detailed testimony that was given in the course of the hearing, focusing on, you know, a kind of a small matter rather than addressing, well, this was consistent, this is consistent, this is consistent, this is detailed. You're giving these names, you're giving these dates. And those are the things that really establish credibility. Not making a mistake. Not doing something ignorant. Because what we have to remember, too, is that in these asylum cases that we are dealing with people. Some of them are not very sophisticated. Some of them are just too trusting of the system. Or they gloss over the paperwork. And this gentleman, Mr. Samari, is saying, "Is that what this says about these applications?" That's what he says. "It's not. That's not me." He says it in his testimony. "That's not me. I didn't even read them.
The judge is entitled to reject that.
I'm sorry?
The judge is entitled to reject that explanation.
Certainly. There's discretion here. No doubt. But I think the judges need to be careful when with the abuse of discretion and when they see the person in front of them and be able to say, "Well, you didn't read it, so let's go back to the beginning. Do you need to make some corrections here?" Or he can do what he did, which seems to be rather harsh. Because now this gentleman is going to be deported, unless this court changes things. He's going to be deported to Guinea. His life will be in danger again. And it's a big responsibility. So did this judge abuse discretion? We're saying yes, he did. In terms of corroborative evidence, of course, if there's not an adverse credibility finding, none is required. And with that, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Rice.
Good morning. May it please the court. Peter Matson for the Attorney General. Mr. Samari submitted two different asylum applications. One he submitted to the Department of Homeland Security, and the second one to the judge at the beginning of his hearing, and he swore to the accuracy of those statements, and they're different. And then in his testimony, he retracted a number of claims that relate to the fundamental premise for his application for asylum, is that the government of Guinea is going to persecute him because he's a member of a particular political party. He backs off of those in his testimony and then claims that the reason why he's being persecuted is because his family's wealthy and the government wants to know if their money is going to support rebels. So we have multiple stories and multiple allegations. The judge looked at his applications and his testimony and said, these clearly don't match. There's no explanation for these. His testimony was not particularly specific or detailed, and in many cases, throughout the transcript, the judge had to ask him multiple times, what do you mean? When did this happen? What is it that you're presenting to us today? The judge cited two specific examples. There are a multitude of them. In a judge's decision, he says there are at least two reasons to find that Mr. Samari lacks credibility. The two are very clear. The statement in his second application, assisted by his attorney, he says that he was arrested and detained and beaten for a week, and then he follows that statement with a number of additional, it's five sentences long, where he details what happened to him in 1998. That he explained that the reason why he was persecuted was because of the money in his family, and he had to explain to the police that, no, we're not giving money to the rebels. And then he goes on to describe a second arrest. And during his testimony, he says, no, I was only arrested once. He was asked several times, were you arrested only once? And he said yes, and that was in 2001. The judge had no way to believe, had nothing to count on, nothing to rely on. There were multiple statements and clearly contradictory statements. The second aspect of the judge's credibility finding, the specific finding, was related to a block on the form that says, has anyone in your family ever been arrested? Specifically on the form, he checks the yes block and says, arrested, convicted, and sentenced for things we have not done. Very specific sentence, and it follows, there are two more sentences that follow it in his application. When asked during his hearing testimony, no, nobody has ever been convicted or sentenced. It's clear that the judge provided very specific and cogent reasons to determine that his story lacked credibility. Was he arrested in 1998? We still don't know on this record. Was his family convicted and sentenced for financing rebels? We still don't know. Why did the government pursue him? Was it because of his membership in a political party, or was it because of the amount of money that his family had? We don't know. The questions are unanswered. The only explanation that he offered during his hearing was that someone must have written it wrong. The judge did not believe that and discounted it because at the time he prepared that application, he was represented by his attorney. These are not minor details. This is the premise for his application for asylum. Are you being persecuted because of your membership in a party? Are you being persecuted for funding rebels? And the judge could not come to a conclusion. The hearing transcript lists at least, as I can find them, at least seven other examples where assertions are made and then retracted. Dates, he doesn't remember when his family's store was vandalized. First it was before his brother was arrested, and then it was after his brother was arrested. There were multiple times when the judge had to ask him to clarify. What is it that you mean? Are you saying that it was in 1996 or in 1998 that the store was vandalized? Attributing these errors to Mr. Samari's confusion about a week-long detention and beating was not persuasive before the immigration judge. The judge must rely on written statements, and a person who prepares invalid and inaccurate written statements and presents them to the Department of Homeland Security or to an immigration judge has to stand by those statements. Or, at the beginning of the hearing, this statement is incorrect on these pages. We need the opportunity to change this. The judge gave them that opportunity. They said that there were no corrections, and these statements are true. The judge must rely on those written statements. And when contrasted with his testimony, which is radically different, the judge was left with no alternative but to determine that he lacks credibility. With regard to corroborative evidence, in this particular case, the judge made a specific credibility finding and then stated in his decision why corroboration would be beneficial, and then stated that there is none. The only thing that was offered to corroborate his testimony was a membership card in a political party, which would not have cured the defect in his testimony, but related to the amount of money that his family had and where that money was going. And that was the corroboration that the judge mentioned in his order and is very specific about what could have been presented. Anything from a third party. Frankly, a letter from his brother in Senegal that indicates, yes, I ran the business and it was worth some money and that's what they suspected me of. That's why I was arrested. That would be wonderful corroboration. It's not been presented in this case. Another would be a third party affidavit from his employer, who was apparently in good stead with the government of Guinea and could have provided a third party affidavit to corroborate any aspect of his claim. It has not been presented in this case. The membership card was not admitted because of several technical and one very important reason, and that is that the government and the judge didn't have the opportunity to verify what the card was. Again, it would not have cured the defect in this case.
The petitioner was allowed to testify to the contents of the card, though.
That's correct, Your Honor. And it didn't sway the judge's opinion because all of his testimony related to the amount of money that his family had and whether they were funding rebels. And whether he was a member of RPG or not would not have cured the defect in his testimony, would not have rehabilitated his credibility. Finally, and in conclusion, this case is very close to the Caprica case. As a matter of fact, one of the specific findings, the written statement that a family has been arrested and sentenced, is identical to the issue, a factual finding in the Caprica case. There are a multitude of differing and confusing instances where Mr. Somare testified and clearly did not have any kind of a consistent story. The judge was entitled to a determination that his testimony lacked credibility, and for that reason the respondent requests that you deny the petition for review.
Thank you, Mr. Manson. Mr. Rice? You have 5.5 minutes.
Rebuttal, I must say, there's only one story here. There's not multiple stories. What there is there's a history of family involvement in the RPG. Father, the brother, the petitioner. During this history, they've been accused of funding the party, but they've also been involved, and as the petitioner has, as a recruiter, which he testified at length, that how he would recruit, who he would recruit, and when he would recruit. There's really only one story here. It's not we were financing and then changed, I was a member. It's not that. It was I was a member. My family has been members for years. We've been accused of financing. I myself have done recruiting. So there's only one story here. In regard to the inconsistencies, the two applications were written the same, and Mr. Somare did his best to explain, and he told the truth. He said, I was arrested one time, and let me tell you about it. And he did. With the second inconsistency, the checking of whether you were convicted, what he was saying is not, were you arrested, convicted? The record says that he was jailed, and he testifies, I was held, I never went before a judge. So I guess what he needed to do was find out and understand whether or not he was convicted. Because he was certainly arrested, and he was certainly detained. But he states under cross, I never went before a judge. And this is what happened to me. I never went before a judge. I was held for 15 months. My family has been a member of this party for many years, all of us. We've been accused of financing. They have vandalized our store. And they've arrested different members of my family, including me. And let me tell you about mine. And that's what the focus of the testimony was on. Country reports support the ones that were admitted in 2003, support the plausibility of the claim. The current Country Reports on Human Rights Practices, 2006, page 1, if I may read, the government continued to implement political and microeconomic reforms, but serious human rights abuses occurred during the year. Security forces unlawfully killed, beat, and abused civilians, particularly detainees. Prison conditions were inhumane and life-threatening. Impunity of alleged perpetrators of killers and abuse remained a problem. There were arbitrary arrests, prolonged pre-trial detention, and incommunicado detentions. This is on page 1, second paragraph. So to think that this story is somehow implausible would be a big mistake. He could be detained for 15 months and never go to court. He could be confused whether he's been convicted. He knows he's been arrested. So how should he answer that question? Should he cross out convicted? I don't know. But what he testified to was a 15-month imprisonment based upon his political affiliations and his political activities. And by law, he should be granted asylum because he falls under that protected group. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthias. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.